Hi everyone, I am Penny and I am an alcoholic. Wow, this is hard not to come to this meeting with all the special treatment I have received. Thank you so much for the flowers and the boxed set. So many available. You know, Kevin told me when I said yes to this what my experience would be, and it is very true. Initially, there's like a little bit of terror, and then in the middle, there's drudgery, and then you get towards the end, and it's like, wow, what a great experience I have had. And I thank you all for showing up. Some of you have been here faithfully week after week. And it's been very helpful to me to really examine what AA means to me. And I was just reflecting about how I prepared for tonight. And normally I seek inspiration, you know, by surfing the web or using the big book or spiritual readings or whatever. And what I realized tonight is I did none of that. And it just really solidified for me that, you know, this is who I am. AA is my life. And I also recall that I didn't really do a lot of qualifying. I would hope that you can believe that I didn't get here by accident. So I just didn't really introduce a lot of that. Yep, I'm a drunk. And if you need to know more of that story, I can always share it. And I don't even really know if I had shared some of the basic things that sometimes we share when we ask to come up to the podium, but my sobriety date is October 10th of 1985. I do have a home group. It's the Lovely Ladies, and we meet on Friday nights at 7:30. I have a sponsor, and because we're talking about sponsorship tonight, the 12th step, I do sponsor 8 women. And out of those 8 women, 3 have been somewhat resistant to doing the 12th step. And all I can do is encourage them to consider this vital step and to continue to work out my program in front of them with love and tolerance. I have learned that this is not a reflection upon me, like when our kids disappoint us or do things to embarrass us, because I did have those feelings early on. I first examine if I'm carrying the message as intended in the big book, and if so, I let it go. I don't get people sober, and I don't get people drunk. I just carry this message of the 12 steps and not the mess today. So I akin 12-step work much like becoming a parent. It completes the circle of understanding life and all it has to offer. It transitions me from being a consumer to becoming a giver. And, you know, when I took my daughter home from the hospital, I mean, there was just pure chaos just getting that thing into the car seat for the first time, you know, and the paranoia of, you know, I'm going to sit in the back and you can sit in the front and you're driving too fast and, you know, all the preparation. You know, the 12 steps, there was a lot of preparation, but until I actually dove into sharing what AA had done for me, I really didn't know what I knew. And that's been the experience of revisiting all 12 steps at this meeting here. So by transitioning me from taking, which there is a phase in our recovery where we take a lot, I have to become a giver if I'm going to live out the 12th step. It reveals so much about me, what I'm willing to do to stay sober myself, and how much I'm willing to do the will of God. It highlights my selfishness and self-centeredness, my tendency to protect my time, and reveals my controlling nature. Without sponsorship, how can I expect to work on these character defects and grow spiritually? How can I become a useful member of society? How do I give away what was so freely given to me? Step 12, haven't had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, We tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Having had a spiritual awakening, which came about by me working the 11 steps preceding, it produced a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. Now I embark upon giving it away to keep it. New members are not instructed in the big book. I'm getting on my podium, okay, right now, to ask for a sponsor. We're told in Chapter 7, Working with Others, as part of our own working the 12 steps, that we are the one to ask new members if they need a sponsor. And if I cannot do that, at the very least, I can try to connect that person with a sponsor. I didn't feel like that for a lot of years, but the longer I'm around, the more I see that lacking. And I think it's a great disservice. You know, when I recall what I felt like my first couple of weeks in these rooms, you know, how I remember the fear and the uncertainty and my feelings of inadequacy, searching for a sponsor. I mean, for me, I'm somewhat outgoing, so, you know, I found somebody that I did ask after about maybe a month or so in the program. But some people are terrified when they're in here, you know? And so I've become a little bit more mindful that not everybody's like me. So in carrying the message, the primary goal is to take the new person through the 12 steps. I tell my new sponsees this right out of the gate. If I have decided I want what they have, and this is a question to me, if I want what other AA members have, am I willing to go to any length to get it? I wish I would remember on day one with a new person to ask them this, because at some point there's this thing called whining that takes place, right? And there's a resistance to take a suggestion. And the excuses start to fly, and, you know, I every time I examine this, I think, darn, I wish I would have asked them if they're willing to do anything for sobriety, because that's a great time to ask that person that particular question. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about how I sponsor, the sponsorship path, if you will, when I have a new person. Right out of the gate, I ask them to read our basic text, the big book. And I ask that after they read certain sections, you know, each section, whether it be a couple pages or an entire chapter, I ask them to explain what is it that you got from that. I mean, do they really understand what the purpose of that particular chapter was? What is it that they need before they can move forward? I encourage big book meetings if the sponsee struggles with reading. Sometimes people don't like to read. Sometimes they don't like to read the big book because it was written so long ago in the language. If they're having problems because they're kind of shaky, you know, a minimum of 2 pages a day, you know, if they can get that under their belt. I ask that they call me pretty much daily for a couple months, and then as I see that person progressing, then I will reduce the number of weekly calls. I think it's important that early on that we kind of figure out, you know, who we are together. Again, I don't get too caught up on, well, that person doesn't seem like a good fit for me, because my goal is to get that person through the 12 steps. And there's lots of people I might not jive with as far as personality-wise, but I can respect what they have to offer to me, whether it be an employer or the pastor at the church or going and taking a class. You know, whatever it might be, that person has something to give to me, and it doesn't matter that we get along. I determine where the person is spiritually, and I assist where needed. Sometimes the person really, really struggles with the spiritual concepts of this meeting, or of the 12 steps, And for me, that came easily, and I try to be appreciative that that's not the story for everybody. And so I'm there to, you know, help in any way, and I'll talk and talk and talk about the spiritual aspect, and hopefully that is something that the new sponsee will, you know, sooner than later arrive at. I ask if they are attending meetings on a regular basis. I mean, that's one of my first questions. How are you today, and when did you go to a meeting? Because that's important. I went to a meeting every day for a year and a half. Sometimes I went to three meetings on a Sunday. We lived out in the county, but that's my experience. When I got sober, all I did was work and drink. And when I took the drinking away, I worked and went to AA meetings. And so that became my life initially, and I think it was very helpful, but I didn't have a home. I didn't have a child. I didn't even have a dog. So that was something I could do. Plus, I was living with somebody that was attending meetings, so that made it super convenient, because I don't particularly like to drive, and he does. So, but today, I sponsor women, you know, older women, women my age, and then women that are, you know, 24 years old. And so sometimes it's not easy to get to a meeting when you have three kids, you know, and I appreciate that. We start working the steps after the reading comes along. You know, by the time that we're getting into how it works, you know, the reading and the phone calls and the attendance at meetings is usually, you know, a couple months. But I got a woman who's approaching 3 months. She's on step 9. And that's because she had such a strong spiritual connection that we were able to just kind of breeze through all of those steps, and she's starting her 9th step this weekend. So I teach what our responsibility is as an AA member. I talk, you know, as the person's coming along through the steps, service work. Service work saved my butt. I encourage the concept of becoming a member, not a consumer, as I said. There is a time where, yes, we come and just plop our hineys in a chair and we absorb and we should be in that state. But at some point, I start encouraging getting a home group, because that is where we learn of the traditions. At least that's where I learned about the traditions. If you want to learn about the traditions, get a home group and then show up at a group conscience meeting, right? That is like a good introduction, like, wow. Chair a meeting. I think it's important to start getting comfortable, you know, leading meetings, chairing meetings, because at some point you're going to be sharing your story, and I think all of that is just preparation. I encourage that my new sponsees, when they can, if they drive, to offer rides to other AA members, especially newer people. I encourage setting up meetings and cleaning up and all of the work that's involved with having a meeting, and I encourage tossing a dollar in the basket. I don't usually have to do that too much, but, you know, because if I'm there, I see that what's going on. But all of that to me is service work, and service work is what ensures that there's an AA meeting, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And, you know, this is our triangle, right? Service, unity, and fellowship. So the unity part, I encourage, I explain that we're all just sick people trying to get well, and exercise caution. And, you know, these rooms are no different than what it's like out there in the world. And, you know, sometimes the people in these rooms are not working their steps. And I think it's important, especially for women, that they, I guess I'm always a little surprised, and it's an opportunity for me to clarify that, you know, we need to keep our circles tight, especially when we first come into the rooms. And it's easy to just, like, you know, love and joy and let's be a hippie and we all love each other and life is great. And that's not always the case. You know, there's people here with real issues, and some of them are here because they don't want to be here, and they're just playing a game. They're not here for sobriety, and so I share that just so that nothing bad will happen, I guess. I answer questions about the types of meetings that we have, you know, the open discussion, closed discussion, singleness of purpose, if that person's duly addicted, and kind of explaining what the etiquette is surrounding that. I talk about, we got conferences and retreats coming up all over the place. What a great place to experience unity. What a great place. I know for me, you know, attending conferences and retreats really showed me the breadth of AA. And I had no idea. It's not just a little, one little room or, you know, a meeting in Erie. It's worldwide. And when you attend conferences and retreats, you know, a retreat's a little bit more intimate, and a conference is like, you know, holy cow. I was married, I am married to a person that was a conference junkie almost. I felt like he was. He wasn't. There is such a thing. I don't know if you've ever met a conference junkie, but it was like, that's all they just go to every conference. They travel all over the United States, sometimes all over the world, and you know, especially in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania State of Young People in AA. I can just do the chant, right? Pensy. But anyways, we did a lot of those. We hosted one in Edinburgh when we first got sober, and it's great fun. It's a great way to feel like life is going to actually be fun. So I definitely encourage anything that helps the new person have an appreciation that this is a lifetime, and you know what? It doesn't mean a lifetime in jail. It's a lifetime of fun if you choose. I explain the importance of anonymity and what it is not. I hear that misspoken many times, that you know, people are afraid to share their last name in the rooms of AA, and anonymity is not about that. You know, anonymity is about that we don't break a person's anonymity outside of these rooms. And you know, I've inadvertently did that early on, not meaning to. You know, seeing somebody out and about and, you know, accidentally saying, you know, yeah, I saw you at that meeting, and not thinking, you know, being young and stupid and not, I mean, I knew better, but I just got so excited about seeing somebody in AA. So I try to explain, you know, how important that is to some people. Some people don't really care. And other people, it's really important, especially when it has to do with their livelihood. Fellowship is the other part of the triangle. I was waiting to do that some week. I got the big glass. Oh, no, I didn't spill it off. It's just a little dribble. Yeah. I do encourage attendance. You know, as I said, to meetings and conferences, you know, I was talking about that in detail about the unity, but, you know, the fellowship is, you know, those sometimes you can receive lasting relationships from that. And fellowship, you know, we have all kinds of drinkers, right? We have the person that drank at home or drank secretly, only drank at parties, and then the bar drinkers like me. So, yeah, I think fellowship is important, especially to those of us that were bar drinkers, you know, because we wanted to have that party mentality, and we do like to socialize. I speak about the meeting before the meeting and the meeting after the meeting with my new ladies, and just let them know that sometimes, you know, if you're running in, just grabbing a meeting and running out, you're not going to be forming any true relationships. You know, it requires a commitment on their part to kind of hang out. And I've heard things like, well, nobody ever invites me out for coffee afterwards. Well, you don't, you just invite yourself, you know. And some people, that's like, what? Well, yeah, you just kind of start hanging out, and sooner or later, somebody's going to invite you, or you can ask if you can tag along. At least that's the way I've done it. Many make other AA connections. That means when we hand out phone numbers, we're expecting somebody to call us once in a while. And if we don't give those numbers out, then there's no chance that those other connections can be formed. And that's something that's a little frustrating to me also, is I have seen many times with my sponsees that I'm their only source of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get that for the first couple months, but I don't want to be their only source of AA. You know, this is my opinion. This is how I do things. And sometimes I'm not going to be there. I mean, there's times I go places where there is no cell service, you know? And so I really do encourage them, in case an emergency would arise and I can't get to my phone, you need to have a list of phone numbers that you feel comfortable calling in case you need to be talked down off the ledge. Some of the practical advice I've given surrounding drinking situations, do you have a reason to be there? Because sometimes people feel like they have a commitment, but really they don't. You know, early on, that person, that sponsee, might not be in a place where the intuitive thought comes. They don't know what decision to make. A wedding, a graduation, things of that, a party, a Christmas party. That's a tough decision sometimes for people. They feel like they have to go. You know, we've heard over and over again, possibly you've heard that, if you have to go to a drinking situation, first ask, do you need to be there? And can you take another AA member with you? You know, do you have your own transportation so that if it gets too hairy that you can, leave? Do you have phone numbers with you? Can you pull away for a phone call? So all of those are, just some practical solutions to how to deal with going to a place where alcohol is being served. Work problems. Oh boy. So the thing that's helped me the most that I pass along is God is my employer. Because, there's a whole bunch of people that we can work with that just make it really difficult sometimes. And that perspective for me has been the most helpful thing that I've been able to learn over these past years. Family problems, we all have those. So pretty much trust God and be patient. We don't always have to have every answer when a situation arises. And one of the chapters in our big book that people don't read too often, I'm assuming, would be Two Wives. And to me, that deals a lot with family issues. How do we, male or female, deal with the alcoholic, either active or not? It's just tough. These are the tough areas. Work and family, I think, are the most difficult things. Old friends. I had no old friends, so this was not an issue for me. But I ask, where were those people, these friends of yours, when you got sober? I had lots of drinking acquaintances. I didn't make connections with any of those drinking acquaintances unless I bumped into them in the bar or I happened to get invited to a party. But I never talked to any of those people when I was not drinking. So it was a very easy transition for me. But I do recognize that there are people that have like real relationships. And, I find that in some of the women that are a little bit older. And it's a process. It's helping that sponsee realize that what you thought was that a true relationship was not. I'm working with somebody right now, And there's this friend in her life, and they've known each other for 20 years, and it's been kind of, they've been using each other. And it's a hard thing to recognize that you're using somebody because they're giving you something, and they're using you because you're giving them something, but it's nothing, the something is not a true friendship. It's not caring and loving and considerate or anything like that. It's just kind of bailing each other out of their scrapes here and there, you know. And so, you know, weeding through that relationship is the difficulty, because you feel guilty that you've been kind of using this person, or do you feel sorry for them? I mean, those are really not good that's not a good motivation in my book anyways, to continue on in a friendship where the other person's still drinking, you know. So just kind of working through these are things that I've found that have been topics of discussion, I guess I would say. A prayer and meditation, I mean, to me that's practical advice. I suggest that right out of the gate also. And, you know, if there's difficulties there, as I shared last week, I really try to encourage and offer suggestions on how to improve that, whether it's increasing it from 1 minute to five, it's setting a timer on your phone, it's reading meditation books, you know, whatever it might entail. Meetings, you know, sometimes I'm asked, well, how many meetings do I have to go to? And most of us have heard that answer, and the answer is until you want to. And so sometimes, you know, yes, we don't want to go to a meeting, but for the most part, I want to go to a meeting, you know. It's not like a big struggle or I have to go, but there was a long time that I had to go, and I wasn't particularly happy about it. And the other area that sometimes I am asked to give advice in is money. And, you know, we all have a myriad of money issues. And I keep it simple. If there is a tendency that person's a workaholic, or they're trying to dig themselves out of debt, and so they want to fixate on, you know, making money instead of getting sober, you know, I just suggest, you know, pray and go to work. It's all going to work out. You know, sometimes I have no idea how I've been able to pay for the bills that were piling up. Like, it feels like magic. I mean, I know it's not, but it's really an opportunity for me to express to these new ladies that you just do the best that you can and everything works out. Somehow that weird bill that shows up, you know, gets paid. Somehow there's 50 extra bucks that come floating into your life. And there's no way that you can say that. A person has to have that experience. I have had that experience numerous times. So when it comes to money, I mean, obviously if there's something that I can do in a small way, I will. But for the most part, you know, I just say pray and go to work, and it will somehow work out. Trust the process. I think also the 12 step is very instrumental in the 12 steps and coming to terms with, you know, we are a governed body, and that governance is through the 12 steps or 12 traditions. So, I mean, it's all about to serve and not govern. And this can happen, as I said, at the home group level. And I have seen situations where service positions were held for many, many years. And, you know, there's varying reasons for that, yes. But sometimes I question whether the spirit of rotation is being exercised. And I have found that, you know, I have done that, like a concern that, you know, nobody's going to do it like me, right? So I'll just keep doing it, and then I can be a martyr and I hang up on the cross and everybody will feel sorry for me. And the other side of that is if I'm starting to get a resentment about the service position that I'm holding, then I need to check my motives. And these are all things, too, that I think, you know, is a part of sponsorship. A attraction, not promotion. I'm no longer trying to save the world, only those placed in front of me. You know, when I first got sober, I wanted to convert my entire family to becoming an AA member. And I just need to be mindful today that someone is always watching my character. They're watching my reactions to situations and my words. So I need to live by spiritual principles at all times as much as possible. And I think that is where the attraction comes in. I need to also continue to enlarge my spiritual life and avoid that terrible thing called contempt prior to investigation. So lastly, wow, I'm just a little chatbox tonight. So what was so freely given to me, but it was a cost to another AA member? A warm smile and a warm handshake. You know, to have someone look me in the eyes, look into my eyes that were filled with craziness and fear, and to see back eyes that are assuring, and there's a calmness in that sparkle that we talk about. I mean, what a great gift that was given to me. A phone number. You know, I remember having thoughts like, oh my gosh, that person is so respectable, and they're giving me their phone number. Like, is this a mistake? Or maybe a text to someone and saying to them, I just prayed for you. Because there's one thing to say, I will pray for you, but it's quite another to know at that very moment someone's praying for you. An invite for coffee, to go on a walk, or to attend a function. You know, no one was inviting me anywhere. I was just busting parties and showing up at bars, you know. So to think that someone really invited me to a party, I remember, in Chazal, Bert and Judy, I remember that they invited us to their home, Eric and I, in our first year of sobriety, or maybe the second, because I think we're about a year off. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's a professor at a college. And, like, it was so bizarre to us. And we were a little unnerved. We were like a little suspicious. We didn't know what we were stepping into. So these little things, I mean, were something that somebody else in the rooms extended to us, and how this is my reaction to it. A card from my home group to say get well when sick. When I was recovering from cancer, the one thing I got were hundreds of cards. I swear it was hundreds, probably not, but it was a stack. It was probably about 5 inches high. And for a long time, I just tied a big ribbon around it. You know, you don't know what that means. Sometimes we're just signing them, you know? Yeah. But until you're in on the receiving end of that, it really does mean a lot, these little things that we do. To invite an AA member to a non-AA function where there's only AAs in attendance, like parties, sitting around a campfire on a summer's night. I remember being invited to do that and how wonderful that was to be a part of. There was a AA member named Jim, and Eric and I mean, we're just like a couple years sober, and it was his 1 year anniversary, so we got a cake, and he didn't know we got a cake. We had a few people over after the meeting. He talked about that years later, how special that was to him, and what do we know? We just wanted to have cake and a few people over, and obviously, you know, Jim was special to us. But we just don't know how that impacts other people, especially early on. To offer help, you know, I'm pretty self-sufficient to a fault, but when we moved one time, we just went to the meeting first, and we asked people to help us. That's the best way to do it, face-to-face. Go to a meeting. Hey, we're moving. Can you help us? What are they going to say? No. It was wonderful. It was done so quickly, and everybody was willing to pitch in. When I was going through chemotherapy, I got pretty sick, from the treatments. And there was a couple times the ladies all got together, and they came over and they brought an AA meeting to my home. That, to them, probably didn't seem like a big deal. To me, it was the world. Also, during that time, I wasn't going to as many meetings, and Eric, would take our 2-year-old daughter to a meeting, and she was adorable. She's still adorable, but she had these beautiful little ringlets, and the ladies loved her. So he would go to meetings, and people would, entertain Brianna, with coloring. Those are huge things. Eric needed recovery, needed meetings more than anything at that time, so he was so appreciative. And another example of help was also during this time. God really grew me up during this cancer time. Was a person who's no longer with us, Chuck. I've shared the story so many times, but it really touched me. He called, and it was probably February. It was miserable outside, and he says, "Do you need anything?" And I couldn't think of anything but postage stamps. So he goes, "I'll be over. We're going to go get some, I'll take you to the post office." So he comes over in his little tiny car. It was so cold outside. And it just left an impression upon me that he was willing to do that, to come out in February and take me to the post office to get stamps. And another thing is how we show up for each other. Eric's father died right before Brianna was born, so it was 1992. And, his parents grew up out in the county, as did I, and the funeral is out there, and it was just a small town funeral, and, you're just going about your business. And I saw a couple of AA members. I drove all the way out there, and I just burst into tears. I was fine with everything. When I saw them, it was just a comfort to know that somebody would take time out of their day. And these are drunks, right? These are people that didn't show up for anything ever. And here we are doing these small things for each other. And they're so big in another person's life. We just don't know. And I've been, again, on the receiving end of that. And I hope that the actions that I do for others, that somehow it also impacts them. So a meeting room, this is something that was freely given to me. A meeting room with an open door and a seat to sit in, where both the lights and the coffee are on. The room is filled with smiles and laughter. As each person enters, they are welcomed as though they are boarding a cruise ship or with a warm handshake, with eye-to-eye contact and a sincere, "How are you doing?" All of these things were freely given to me at some sort of sacrifice of another. It's up to me now to extend these things to the next suffering alcoholic by working step 12. Thanks.
Before we go into questions, I have a present for Miss Penny.
What? Oh, how pretty. Two drunks. Lovely, thank you.
Stay here, we gotta do questions.
You're welcome.
Now we can do questions.
Dave, alcoholic. Penny, why didn't Chuck just bring those postage stamps over instead of dragging you out in the cold to go get them?
Well, because I was really homebound, and I just needed to get the stink off of me. So, and there might have been some other errands that needed to be run, but that was the main purpose of our outing. And I'm sure he offered. It was so long ago. But, you know, it was a warm car. I didn't have to drive it, and I just, you know, pretty much, it was just an act of service. Yeah.
Hi, Penny. Jack, alcoholic. Terrific job. Thanks so much. So you alluded to this before you started, but when you're working with someone, what are some of the things that you do to try to encourage them to take on a service commitment or responsibility?
You know, I just continually remind them, you know, service was something that came naturally to me. I just always remind them of, you know, meetings just don't magically happen. It's just through conversation. And I kind of try to be an example when I go to a meeting. That doesn't always work. My boss, I have a newer boss, and my previous boss, too, would say, you know, well, if I'm an example of getting there on time and staying till the end of the day and, you know, doing what I'm supposed to do, my employees will do that. That's not true. Some people just don't pick up on that. So I think it's a combination of being the example and also having the... I don't consider it a hard conversation. I look at it as education, to educate that person that we are responsible. If a person doesn't feel responsible to give away what was given to them, then I feel like I'm just saddened. It's not really a reflection upon me, but you know, it's a reflection, I think, more upon that person and how well have they worked the steps. How much have they really examined themselves and looked at their possible selfishness or self-centeredness or their tendency to be not to give of their time? That's usually it, right? Time is such a precious thing anymore. It's hard, so...
Good night, Joe. First of all, I'd like to say thank you very much for doing this. So let's give Penny a hand, okay?
Thank you.
It's over. And thanks again. Also, I want to remind anybody, if they haven't signed this and they want me to mail you a copy of this, we can take care of that. Again, thank you very much. This is, you're right, it's a difficult thing to do. And
yeah, it was good though.
But
it was very good.
It was very good when you're done. It's very good when you're done. So remember that, Rick. All right, thanks, Penny.
Thanks,
Penny.
Is there any announcements for membership?